Public schools are increasingly chaotic and undermine Christian children's faith. We need to rebuild our Lutheran schools to provide a truly Christian alternative. Redeemer Classical School is rebuilding this Christ-focused education in Fort Wayne, Indiana, teaching students to wonder at God's creation and to love their neighbors. We need you to help us give children this faithful Christian education. Donations to Redeemer Classical School go directly to providing scholarships. Visit fortwayneclassical.com/give.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Most of the time in academia, at least they tell us, freedom of thought, freedom of ideas, what it's called academic freedom after all, is supposed to rule the day. If your research is good, if your facts are solid, if your data and your methodology is solid, you can get published, and that's how things work in academia. That is the mother's milk of academia, isn't it? What if your research is all solid, your facts are solid, your methodology is solid, but your conclusions, or maybe even not your conclusions, just an assumption that you made that until 5 minutes ago was an assumption everyone made, is no longer politically in currency? Well, maybe you don't get published. Joy Pullman joins us to talk about a suppressed study on the intelligence of men and women that has been accepted and then polled several times in the academic circle. She's managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Journals, Universities, Deep Six Study for Noticing Men and Women Are Different. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there. Thank you.
Before we get into the particulars of this study and its fate up and down the ladder of academia, what does this incident tell you about the state of writing research in the soft sciences?
Well, basically, to me, suggests the tip of an iceberg that a lot of people suspect is floating out there, ripping holes in the bottom of lots of boats, to extend the metaphor. The point being that I have for a long time, you know, wondered about basically what is the information that we don't know, what is not studied, what is not pursued, you know, people's ideas and people's research and just data points, facts that we need to know to be thinking citizens and to inform our behavior and our government deliberation. There's a lot apparently out there that is missing. And so the incident that we had here of several mathematics journals not publishing a study that basically was predicated on the real validated facts that men and women have biological differences, really it suggests that there is a lot of things that we don't know. We are often seeing only half the picture. It's really hard to say how big the picture is because we don't know the volume of things that we're not being allowed to see and not having surface in, you know, our academic publications and through universities.
So tell us about this paper, An Evolutionary Theory for the Variability Hypothesis, what it said and didn't say, and why it managed to get published and then polled several times.
Well, several mathematicians got together. They basically had, you know, like people do when they do an academic study, they had a hypothesis and they ran some numbers and some data to try to confirm or disprove it, and then they published their results in a paper that, you know, they sent around to various journals to have vetted by their peers, have the data checked over, you know, and then hopefully published. But the kind of subject matter, as you mentioned, is this thing about human intelligence. So I guess the simple way to put it is that men and women, if folks are familiar with the idea of a bell curve, men have a sharper bell curve of intelligence than women do on average. So if you take all the men and you take all the women and you give them an intelligence test, men are going to have a lot more people who score actually retarded on the test, and men are going to have a lot of people who score actually genius on the test. And women are going to be a lot more even, you know, so there's not so many extremely unintelligent women, but there's also not as many extremely intelligent women. So we just have a flatter, more even bell curve. So this study was trying to explain, wow, you know, what would be a Darwinian reason that this would be the thing that we see happening in real life? So the author went on to this new publication called Quillette and told his story of how an editor from, I believe it was Penn State, at a mathematics journal, said she was really excited to hear about the paper. She's interested in publishing it. She's going to bring it to her board. They went through all the typical vetting processes, you know, that the journal does. And they were already, you know, all the way almost to publication. You know, all systems go. They communicated. They accepted the paper. When all of a sudden, you know, then she came to him and said, you know, even though we accepted the paper, we are not going to publish it. And, you know, he said he is flabbergasted. He'd never heard of such a thing. So, of course, he says, why? And she says, well, basically some people heard, you know, some other academics heard about your study, and they think that it will basically contradict the ideological idea that, you know, fewer women are interested in science, that fewer women, you know, don't go into these kinds of hard, very high intelligence required fields, so on and so forth. So because this paper reflects a idea that they don't politically agree with, they basically waged a quiet information and suppression campaign to get the paper unpublished, not published. And it's kind of a long saga, and it's lots of shocking details, but the long and short of it is that happened again at another publication. They invited, you know, the paper to be placed there. They went all the way through almost a publication, and then, you know, academics, they found out that it was about to be published at a new place, shut that down. And what actually happened, they published it, and they put it online. 3 days later, they took down the paper and put at the exact same link a different paper that the journal published. So if someone were looking for the suppressed study, they would find a completely different one, which is very weird and Orwellian in my mind. So that's kind of what happened here with the story of this paper.
So basically, all the paper did, and we should also mention it's also lost co-authors. Co-authors have been pressured
that's
to pull
right,
their names
right.
From, and that means something in the academic world when you are co-authoring papers. Basically, the sin that was committed here was simply to either assume or to go on the assumption that there is a difference between men and women, that they ought to be studied for differences as well.
That's right. I mean, and there was nothing factual that the paper got wrong. I mean, this paper was not rejected for getting its analysis or its data wrong. All of that was correct. It was rejected because the people who were waging this campaign did not like the truth, the data, the information that the study discussed. So it would be kind of like saying, you know, if you simplify it, you know, if someone said, you know, the sky is blue in the middle of the day and someone does not like the color blue, hates the color blue, puts her fingers in her ears and says, I refuse to let me tell you that, and you may not tell anybody else that the sky is blue either. It's just very weird. But this isn't, you know, toddlers. These are people who are almost all of them getting taxpayer funding. They're at public universities. The University of Chicago is a well-respected. I mean, these are prominent universities, you know, among the leading ones in the country. Professors at them participated in the suppression campaign. So, you know, these are you know, people who are at the heights of our culture who should be leaders in searching for truth, which is really the mission of university, instead of doing the exact opposite, using their power to suppress the truth and to manipulate people.
This is at a different level. It's not as though, as you have said, they're disagreeing with the conclusions or they think it's bogus. They're saying it's true, the method is sound, the research is sound, the data are sound, and we even agree with the conclusion, we just don't want to hear it.
That's right.
I wonder then, to come back to where we began, if this is the kind of framework that everything is being forced through, the filter that everything is being forced through, we found out about this one because the author is kind of bulletproof in academia, near retirement.
That's right.
Not afraid of things.
Yep.
But academia is a meritocracy where who you know and where you publish means your career. Coming back to what you mentioned before, how many papers like this simply never see the light of day because the filter is in place and the authors or co-authors don't have the social or academic insulation to be able to write about it in Quillette?
Right. We have no idea. We have no way of knowing. But, you know, while writing this article and after its publication, I had a lot of people, academics, you know, people at prestigious universities, you know, people that I know that are working in the social science, in the social sciences, you know, reach out to me and say, this, you know, I've seen this happen several times. You know, this is not just this fellow, you know, complaining. This is endemic. This happens often in a variety of sectors, in healthcare and government reports, in social science and family policy. And one of the things that people think about is we usually think, okay, you know, all the crazy stuff you hear about on campuses, that is in, you know, the identity politics departments. That's like gender studies, it's feminism, a lot. You know, but it's not, you know, our applied research, our engineering, you know, American, you know, math and science universities, cream of the world still. But this, things like this, you know, and the other feedback that I'm getting from people indicate that that's absolutely not true. I mean, and there's been other validation of this. So in my article, I talk about something called the replication crisis. And so what that is in that recent years, researchers have found that a lot of accepted medical science, other scientific information just flat out isn't true. So, for example, you know, in one study that reviewed a number of really at the front of the science in cancer and blood medicine studies, it found that they could only repeat 6% of the studies that they re-ran all the numbers and the results on. And these are studies that, you know, doctors are using these to treat cancer patients, to treat people with blood, you know, problems. And, you know, they're using unverified information. This is easily a life and death issue in medical items. So we know that this isn't just, you know, crazy identity politics people. This is even in the hard sciences as well. So the corruption of the academy has very far-reaching consequences. It is very far gone and is affecting essentially every single area of the academy. And it has real serious implications for, you know, people's health, for their lives, as well as for things like, you know, our civic discourse, our knowledge about what is good and true and how we come together and make decisions as a culture.
The thing that kind of spooks me about this isn't some head of a department or a grant agency or something like that, someone in the higher echelons of that structure trying to impose these restrictions from the top down. This was kind of crowdsourced censorship in the case of this. That's disturbing.
Right. Well, what seems to have happened was basically, you know, somebody on the board of the initial journal that, you know, the paper was submitted to was basically, you know, is a weaponized ideologue. To put it nicely. And so that person appears to have basically, you know, tipped off a bunch of friends, academic friends, and said, you know, email these people, you know, join me in putting pressure on this committee to suppress this study. And that's exactly what happened. So, you know, activist pressure, repressive behavior is part of the culture of academia. Basically, that little herd of activists, you know, followed the paper around and made sure that, you know, to the best of their ability, it would never see the light of day.
Finally, then, should we be worried about, even as you said before, the hard sciences, biological sciences? A lot of medicine depends on the ability to distinguish men and women from one another in studies and research.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't want to, I go to a regular, normal doctor, you know, my kids get vaccinations, you know, antibiotics work, you know, all that sort of thing. So I don't think we should just start, you know, I don't know, self-treating ourselves with, you know, voodoo beads or whatever. But, I mean, we do need, you know, socially to have a very serious movement towards rethinking and re-vetting a lot of accepted ideas and getting good science because people need it, you know, to live, literally. So, you know, since we are already finding that this is the case, what we really need to do is return the corrupt pressure with some honest pressure, with pressure to say, look, medical institutions, doctors, you know, government, we need to know what science is good and what science is bad, and we need to have energy, efforts, money directed in that, you know, in that direction. And we can't have ideologues corrupting this process because, you know, our health and our civic and our physical health really depends on it.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Journals University's Deep Six Study for Noticing Men and Women Are Different. You can read it and purchase The Education Invasion at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss the TV series The Handmaid's Tale with Megan Ullman. We'll get a review of the movie Crazy Rich Asians with Pastor Ted Geese. We'll talk with Chris Roseboro about megachurch pastor Craig Groeschel's teaching on the essentials of innovation. And we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.